is overrated. Well,
I would say he's mildly Asperger's-y a little bit. That's why he's a genius.
Welcome to the show! I have a bit of a cold. John, can you tell in my voice?
No.
No?
No, I think we haven't done this for a couple weeks, and you're just a little bit weak on the intro.
Yeah, should I try that again?
Like, yeah, cool.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the John, Paul, and Mike Show!
Much better, you see.
How's that?
You're actually an actor. Folks don't know that.
I
and you were acting all weekend, weren't you? What were you doing?
Well, I was in a play with Sue Carver Players.
Yeah.
It was an original play by brilliant director and writer, playwriter. Tom Southwood, called Afterlife the Musical. And I played a mythical creature, Atlas. But Atlas, you know, in the tradition, had an accent just like Sean Connery the whole time.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
So give us some. Do the intro in Sean Connery.
No, okay, all right.
Okay, all right, do it. Come on.
Welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show. I'm Sean Connery, your host today. Paul Holmes couldn't be with us, so...
Well, there's nothing better I love a good 007 movie.
Okay, you know what's bad, though? When you have to tell people sitting in the front rows to turn their cell phones off, and you're doing it in the Sean Connery voice.
Tell us, do it.
No, because the word sitting changes a little bit.
To shitting? Let's introduce our guest if she can participate.
I'm not going to introduce the guest
yet. Maybe she wants to say something.
You're going to introduce the guest in a minute. But before we do...
Okay.
I want to talk about predictions, and this is a couple minutes here. You know what? We did really well on our predictions, and I'm going to include you and me, John, and I'm going to include
how unusual
Mike
of you.
Gagan,
yes.
Who came on the show, and I'm going to include Bernard von Schulman,
all right.
Victoria Vision, who also came on the show. So we predicted generally, or certainly Mike and I predicted, you guys were a little softer, that with the exception of the mayors in Victoria and Saanich, the incumbents would do well across the region. And they did. Hands down, they did well.
Well, how many were there? Two?
Incumbents?
Yeah.
No, the incumbents were the majority of people that got elected.
Go do your homework.
I gotta
go
do my math.
Counselors.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, including counselor.
Anyway, that lovely voice was Sonia Thoreau.
Yes.
Ex-campaign manager of the fantastic...
Ex-campaign manager. You sound like she got fired.
Now the mayor has... Yeah, that's true.
All right, this show is going way off track. You know what?
Predictions.
You know what else we forgot? Okay, so welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Feel free to chime in.
Okay.
We forgot to thank our awesome sponsor, Shatterbox Coffee Bar, where we are today, which is 950 Yates Street, downtown Victoria, across from London Drugs.
Yeah.
And a fabulous place, makes a fabulous cup of coffee.
Yeah, well, it's got a neat vibe here. You can walk right off the street.
Yeah.
It's in that Harris Green neighborhood, which is very people-friendly, walking-friendly. Love it here. Thank you. Thank you, Shatterbox.
And they serve coffee, which I love.
Yeah, I know.
Especially a good cup of coffee. All right, back to predictions. So in Saanich, Mike predicted Atwell would win. Bernard predicted Leonard would win. Did you make a prediction for Mayor Saanich? I wasn't firm on it. I wasn't sure what was going to happen.
I don't think I did.
Yeah.
I thought Frank would win.
Honestly,
so
yeah.
So honestly, yeah. I would have been wrong.
So we were probably wrong there as well, yeah. However, all of us, I think, predicted Colin Plant would win handily for council.
No, I don't. If I had an opportunity to remember, I wouldn't have.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think the hardest job on the planet is to unseat an incumbent councillor in a local... In the local race.
And he finished third, if I recall.
Second.
So I made some predictions in Souk, which were all accurate.
That's your territory.
So I predicted Maya Tate would win for mayor, even though I did not endorse her.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. She I think, tripled the vote of the next contender.
Okay.
I also predict the new councillors, Brenda Parkinson and Ebony Loggins, would win, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
I hoped that a few incumbents would get knocked off, but... Yeah. But they didn't.
Yeah.
Although the seventh place candidate on the sixth seat council was within 100 votes of taking out one of the incumbents.
All right.
And then Carrie Ray was the one incumbent that I really liked, and she topped the polls. So that was I was generally happy with the outcome in Souk, and happy that I was reasonably good at predicting that too.
Because
you know, isn't that really what it's all about?
Yeah.
Colwood, Mike predicted Lilia Chong. for council, and she came in third, I think, too, didn't she?
Yeah, that was fantastic. Really... one of what I'll call a youth army of new councillors.
Yeah,
Sonia, you're welcome to say anything you like.
If you know,
if you wish.
All right, and in Machozen, my friend Kira got reelected.
Yeah,
on council,
and that's cool.
I think most people sort of thought that was going to happen. Esquimalt, I had a feeling my very good longtime friend Susan Lowe would win. I did not predict she'd come in a strong first place.
Yeah, I know.
So
yeah, well, I think CFAX called Barb Desjardins as mayor within 2 minutes of the polls open.
We all predicted that.
What's interesting about Esquimalt is, I think, I could be wrong, of all the councillors and mayor, there's one man.
Yeah.
It's literally an all-female political scene
it's
out
on the
there.
Cover of the Times.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I think men have made a mess of things, Paul. It's about time
for your generation,
somebody else.
John.
I believe it.
we had Aaron Bremner on the show.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us necessarily went as far as predicting that she was going to win, and she came in a
first place.
And so that was a pleasant outcome because she seemed
another part of the youth army.
And you had a prediction for mayor, which was York.
What did I predict?
You predicted the guy that won, right?
Stephen Price.
Yeah. And I didn't know enough about what was going on in Sydney, but
I'm pretty familiar with stuff out there.
Yeah.
Lots of competing business fractions out there.
Right.
So hopefully Stephen will be able to bring everyone together.
Yeah.
You're on to now Central Saanich?
Central Saanich. Yeah. We predicted Ryan Windsor would win.
Yeah.
Which you know, may have seemed a long shot some time ago, but man, did he ever bring that home.
Yeah.
And is it Neil?
Niall Paltiel.
Niall.
Won.
First place as well.
So we had brand new youth, young councillors win first place in Esquimalt, in Central Saanich, and in Sydney.
Yeah, crazy.
Something's going on. Well, something's going on.
You know, and in Souk Ebony Loggins...
Something's going
on. She's under 30
Hopefully
for sure.
Hopefully we're going to get a sense
of
what that is.
She came in second place. But, you know, I think it's a safe candidate, right? Everybody, you know, people our age, younger people are going to go, you know, we want a young person on council. And so even if their politics might be completely different than ours, I'm going to vote for the young person because I want the council to be representative of the community.
Right? I think completely opposite to your viewpoint, but let's keep going.
All right. And then Victoria, finally. And now... We left out Oak Bay, Highlands, Langford, North Saanich, View Royal.
That's fine. We'll
I didn't
do that
make
on
any,
another show.
I didn't make any bold predictions. Yeah. Victoria, I predicted a narrow victory for Dean Fortin.
Mm.
You'll recall.
I do.
And there was involvement of eating a hat and other sorts of things.
Yeah.
Because everybody else predicted a narrow victory for Lisa Helps. And I was proven wrong.
Well, I was surprised by the narrowness. I thought there would be a larger...
Yeah, you thought it would be a larger.
I thought it would be larger. Yeah. I was certainly very pleased and happy that the vote was up. I believe it was up to 40%, so you'll likely help us.
Yeah, and I was dead wrong about the turnout as well. So hats off to you guys.
No,
I was. I predicted it would be flat.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do to raise the vote turnout. But, I mean, it was a regional phenomenon, a provincial phenomenon.
It was amazing. Yeah,
okay,
it was great.
Okay. So are we done?
We all predicted Ida Chong would come in a distant third.
Mm.
And we were all right.
Yeah.
I predicted Justin Stevenson was going to win.
Yeah.
And he came in 12th.
Yeah.
Which was kind of disappointing because
well,
you don't
when
get
you
a guy
at
that
when you look
skill
at the
set,
volume of, when you look at the number of votes, he did well as a first-timer.
Yeah.
Surprised Margaret Lucas got in. Like Margaret Lucas, I'm glad she's in.
Yeah.
But surprised at her vote strength.
Yeah. And the other one, I guess we shouldn't be overly surprised, Jeremy Loveday, obviously.
Yeah, we should be.
Well,
he had a big, they had a big machine
he
behind
campaigned
him,
with Ben Isaacs, and he campaigned strongly.
Yeah.
And he already had name recognition.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of buzz.
And he came on the John Paul and Mike show, so clearly,
that
put him over the top.
Yeah.
And, of course, you and I and Chris Coleman predicted that Chris Coleman would come in eighth place.
Did we?
We did.
You're kidding.
Oh, yeah.
He
predicted it. We predicted it. He came in eighth place. So, you know, so he squeaked on again. And who I like to refer to as the most underappreciated guy on council. We've been friends for years, of course.
That's right.
But anyway, that's it. Those were the predictions. Well, and of course, we're sitting here with the campaign manager for Lisa Helps campaign, who pulled off the 89-vote victory.
That's right.
By, you know, push-pulling and dragging people to the polls, undoubtedly. Tell us the reflection on that experience.
The entire experience of getting out the vote?
In one sentence. No, 140
We could talk for a long time. Just the experience, the emotional stuff.
Well, it was exhilarating and it was exhausting. It was incredibly inspiring and it was incredibly disheartening all at the same time. I was with those of you that predicted the narrow victory.
Yeah.
I never really articulated that because, of course, we had to be positive. And I tended to rein in the notion on the campaign that, you know, this was a landslide, it was ours. And I mean, first of all, that's a bit of an Achilles heel in a campaign, that overconfidence.
Yeah.
So part of my job was to make sure people realized how much hard work we had to do to get that one vote more than Dean Fortin.
Or 89.
Or 89. I mean, you might have heard Lisa talk about this, and I certainly have been saying this a ton since the outcome. The 89 is providing an incredible message for people that voted for the first time. I walked into Foo restaurant 2 days ago. The guys behind the counter, I had talked to everybody I came across these last months. I talked to them about the campaign. Are you going to vote? Do you know there's an election? So it seems I got these guys to the polls. And so I walked in the other day and they said, this is the first time I voted on a municipal election and it actually mattered.
Yeah.
So this notion that everybody that voted, it mattered. Every effort that people made, it mattered. The Our Place poll that Bernice Camano worked for, that mattered. I had a homeless guy in Cook Street Village. I hate referring to him that way. Thomas voted and actually wore a pin on behalf of the campaign for the last couple of weeks. He was in tears the day after the election. I saw him on the street.
I bet.
He was in tears. He felt represented for the first time in his life.
Amazing. Yeah. I know I've been on the other side of that. And you'll remember this, John, when I was campaign manager for half of the campaign for Troy D'Souza, and in the election where he lost by 68 votes.
And was supposed to win.
It's the prediction is it's going to be the landslide victory. Yeah. And, you know, the danger from a campaign manager's perspective is you cannot allow that to infect people because they'll become passive.
Yes.
Right? You have to always be close.
Even
if you're not.
Well, I genuinely believed we were close because I knew that there was going to be a massive amount of organization and power behind Dean in the last days, as there was.
Yeah.
I also knew that this was the first time he faced serious competition, which galvanizes his support. So I wasn't naive. And I also knew that our win from the very beginning strategically depended on raising the voter turnout. Sure. Hugely risky thing to count on. So.
Well, and you, totally. Yeah. And when I first heard that from Lisa, I was like, yeah, good luck, right? Because, you know, you remember.
It's hard.
I try not to be cynical.
You weren't cynical. It was scientific.
Well, and let's face it, you know, and Bernard von Schulman had a fantastic article about this, the power of incumbency in Victoria. Mm-hmm. And it was something like 90%+ of incumbents win. So when you're up against an incumbent, you're facing a massive uphill battle. Massive. In any election, but especially, I think, in a local election where name recognition is so important.
And where we were avowed to a positive campaign.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Normally, to take down an incumbent, you have to take down the incumbent.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And I want to say this too. I've known Dean Fortin for years. He's a nice guy. Like he really is. He's a family guy, and maybe you have some different insights. But you know, all of my experiences with Dean Fortin have been positive. Politically, I'm probably very different than him, but I always thought he was a nice guy. And when you're up against the nice guy and you're running a nice campaign, I think it's doubly difficult as well. So that would be my two bits. You had something to add, John.
Well, there are two elements, I suppose, to any campaign. There's the business of politics, the technical bits and pieces of winning, and then there's the philosophy and policy of a campaign. So if I might focus on the latter for a moment.
Right.
So in our predictions, I kept referencing this notion of young candidates winning. Lisa's young. I was part of Lisa's campaign in numerous different ways. Almost everyone I saw there was young. Sonia is young. Tell me what the win means. What does it represent from a policy and a political philosophy kind of way? Perhaps even beyond municipal politics, provincially, because there's now a lot of chatter. It even appears our premier has picked up on this. So I'm really curious to hear your viewpoints around this.
Well, I think there's a coming of age story there for this generation. I don't want to call it my generation. That we can
it
do,
is
that
yours.
We can do
it's
this.
Not mine.
We can do this, and we can do it differently.
We
came up against a lot of understandable skepticism and cynicism about the way we were doing things. We were breaking rules, essentially. But I would go back to the early days that I was on the campaign, which actually wasn't quite the early days of the campaign, but my early days, I found myself having to reassure people that, yes, we will honor basic mechanics of campaigning, but we also have to recognize that status quo campaigning is giving us status quo governance. It's giving us status quo voter turnout. If we wanted to change the nature and the diversity of people coming to the polls, then we needed to change the diversity and the nature of the people on the campaign. And if we were going to do that, we had to change the culture of the campaign and the language and the narrative of the campaign. And I think, to get back to your question about what does this mean, does this, from a sort of a policy or philosophical perspective, we did a SWOT on Sunday night for the campaign, and I think the biggest, most joyful takeaway for the young operations team that you're referring to, because there were people across the spectrum of age, but who you saw on a regular basis in the office, the engine of the campaign, they were young. Wow, we can do this. Wow, we can do this. We can stick to our principles. We can have fun doing it. There was no drama on our campaign. There was no major conflict on the campaign. There were differences of opinion, but it was positive from the inside out. And it doesn't mean we didn't make mistakes, but this notion that now there's an example in the books of doing it differently and succeeding.
I love this because, the mechanics of campaigns is, as a poli with my poli-sci background, fascinates me generally. But I haven't been on a campaign where I was working within a party system, where everybody should generally be on the same page, where there isn't conflict, right? And so here you've got Lisa building the purple coalition, if you will, of undoubtedly, conservatives and liberals and socialists and greens and the whole big muddle of mixture of people. And how on earth did you not have, like, battles breaking out in the trenches?
One of the goals we had in volunteer management was capacity building. We had the intention of actually using the Marshall Gans model of organizing, which in a nutshell is about capacity building of individuals and of communities. We weren't able to formally deploy the mechanics that as suggested by Gans, because as speaking of capacity, as time went on, we realized we had very limited capacity, but it infused everything that we did. So every volunteer that showed interest in the campaign, we had a goal, and the majority of them had never campaigned before. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people had never campaigned before. So I think that's actually one of the answers to why there wasn't conflict, is that people were fresh.
Yeah.
And people came in open-minded.
Right.
So there was a lot less fixed mindsets against
right.
fixed mindsets.
Sure.
So that was one of the answers. But we also met people and gave them the opportunity to try things they'd never done before. We also tried to accommodate the fact that we all needed to be flexible, that the whole thing was iterative. Many of us were learning that as we went. So some of us came from organizational backgrounds. I spent 7 years at UVic, a hyper, overly organized organization in some senses, mm-hmm. to the point of entropy. And here we were in an opposite sort of organized chaos scenario. And so the way to let people feel peaceful in that environment was building relationships between individuals and having outlets to de-stress. And making sure people felt like they could complain when they needed to complain,
right.
and disagree when they needed to disagree.
Okay.
So I had a very interesting experience in this campaign. to some degree less political, more personal. I have been doing, in some capacity or another, been involved with political campaigns since before both of you were born, I think. Anyway, the early 80s. And almost exclusively on the right, the so-called right. I've been involved with conservative campaigns, social credit campaigns, liberal campaigns.
Social what?
Social credit, yeah. I know.
Kidding.
Exactly.
I'm not that young.
And decided to become involved with Lisa's campaign for the first time in my life because I liked the candidate more than any other reason. Generally, I've been very political in my political decisions.
Right.
And that was odd. And likely was one of the few people representing that kind of demographic. Older, white, suits, yep. Chamber, deeply conservative, liberal political organizer.
Right.
And
how did that make you feel?
I wasn't entirely sure how I would fit in.
Yeah.
But liked Lisa.
Yeah.
And
which was the unifying factor.
And frankly,
I want to talk about that.
And frankly, at some point, just didn't care. You get to an age where you don't care what other people think. But nonetheless.
Right. Yeah.
And then what happened was quite interesting, which I wasn't used to. To a large degree, can't accept these. The people that were on this campaign were nice.
Yeah.
And that's unusual, apparently.
That sure. was really unusual.
You haven't been around politics.
They were
exactly. otherwise, yeah.
And continue to be nice. They're kind to each other, respectful of each other. And I was shocked and continue to be shocked.
Yeah.
So to your point, what might this represent? Oh my God, I hope that's what our society looks more like in the future. It'll undoubtedly change as it matures and divests itself with different stakeholders starting to want to have their point of view. But if we could all fundamentally just be a tad bit nicer to each other,
yeah.
that would be a lasting legacy. And Sonia, thanks for that.
Well, and
you're welcome.
Yeah. All right, you had your moment.
Yeah, sure. Like, well, it speaks to your point around really what was different.
Yeah,
what was fundamentally different on the philosophical side.
Yeah. Oh, and that's brilliant, and I love that, John, and I love the sentiment. But I'm also a highly cynical old man, and so
you're quite young, man.
And so inevitably, Lisa will be labeled as something over the next 4 years. And her re-election campaign, I think, may reflect whatever that label becomes. And I'd love to be wrong about that. Time will tell, right? I've been wrong about a few things, as we talked about it with my predictions. But, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was a candidate where, you know, just... Because here's what I love about Lisa. And I said this right from the beginning. And, you know, I've talked about how much I like Dean. I loved that Lisa, on council... that Lisa was the out-of-the-box thinker.
Exactly.
You throw an idea, and she doesn't go, well, you know, that's been done before, and that's been tried before, so screw you, right? It's yeah, oh, that is interesting. I wonder if we could... And then her brain starts moving, and you can see it, right?
Yeah.
So she's so smart.
I'll rebuttal to that,
yeah.
And then I'd love to hear your viewpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. But I understand where you're coming
that's
from.
That's why I love Lisa on council. That's why when we interviewed her, you remember my question was, everybody loves Lisa on council. Is everybody going to love Lisa as mayor? Anyway, go ahead.
So... The contrarian out there,
yeah.
The contrarian to what I just said, was that as soon as Lisa and her ilk get into power,
yeah.
the inevitable power pieces will come into play, and they will look exactly like what we just tried to get rid of.
Right.
Now, I'm just representing a viewpoint.
Yeah.
I heard that the other day. I heard from someone say to me who did not support Lisa, gee, did you see her on the front page of the newspaper? She's tending to her garden and tending to her chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Man, are you kidding?
Remind me to say something about that.
I want a mayor not to look like that. To which I said, what kind of crap is that? clearly.
I thought it was brilliant. I loved it.
So I think now...
Sonia, I want a mayor to look like that.
We've talked about what, a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. I'd love to hear some of your viewpoints on this.
First of all, Lisa said to me, when I was getting my photo taken with the chicken, I remember thinking, oh, what would Sonia say? And when I did see it and I read the article, I emailed her and I said, pre-election, I would have thought something. Post-election, I said to myself, yeah, she raises chickens. Yes, she gardens. She represents what is very, very top of mind for this generation. It should be for all generations, food security. So why would you not want someone who engages in practices that I think build character, but this whole notion of it not being mayoral, right? And it's something that was a massive theme on our campaign, how to make a 39-year-old small woman who likes to garden and wear gumboots look mayoral. How much were we willing to conform based on the need to do so? But for every person that has said to us, because I still get feedback, I hate that she's on the cover with the chicken. I've had as many people saying, I love that she was on the cover with the chicken. And
I think there's a value shift that we haven't seen since the 60s. And I likely would think the same person who doesn't like Lisa on the front cover tending to her garden was the same person in the 60s saying to something a la, I don't like that young person with long hair dancing in the street in the rain.
Yeah. And John, this speaks to what the social phenomenon that you're talking about is this notion that we apply to our politicians within society, where we want them all to be just a little bit better, a little bit smarter, a little bit more sophisticated than we are. And I've always despised that. I've always despised that. I would rather see...
So we can shoot them down?
I'd rather see Lisa with a chicken on the front cover than Lisa dressed in some uncomfortable pantsuit or something, right? Because that's a real person now, right?
She's allowed to be herself now.
Exactly. Yeah. And you remember Nylon Gate during the election?
The pantyhose?
Pantyhose Gate.
Who calls them nylons?
The same person complained to me, why is she talking about pantyhose. Buying pantyhose
for the first time? She's buying pantyhose.
That's not what a mayor should talk
about.
Well,
and my reaction to that was, that is brilliant, because it shows that she gets the job, she understands, the role of mayor. At the same time, she's coming from this from a totally different perspective than a polished, politician.
So Sonia,
right?
Your perspective now on where this, and for those that can't see me, which is everyone, I've got italicized, where does this movement now go? What are the next pieces to this that won't just bring us back 15 years to the same place?
Where it goes now, and it was something that came up in our SWOT that fell into the opportunities category of the SWOT, which is how to keep the constituency that elected Lisa engaged, but not exclusively that constituency. On the one hand, she wants the support and the engagement of this group of people, and we are talking about how we're going to do that. For example, we had the volunteering hub. We're going to keep that alive and repurpose it to keep everybody engaged amongst themselves and to keep them informed about what's happening at City Hall. But the bigger piece to that is delivering on her platform piece, which is authentic two-way public engagement on policy. So, and there are tools to make that happen. The city, to a certain extent, they employ Granicus. They have an engagement tool per se, and yet it is 10% of what is possible with public engagement. And I think that, and I've had a number of people come to me, especially those first-time voters, that have said, well, now what do I do?
Yeah.
So, and for now what I've said is pay attention. Don't drop out. Yeah. Stay tuned in for now, whether that's Lisa's own website or Facebook page or the city's website. Bookmark the city's website. Find out what's on the agenda. Attend council meetings if something that matters to you is on the agenda.
Well, it's been a hallmark of Paul Holmes, is this notion of it doesn't matter what you think or believe in, but do we have an opportunity to have voice our opinion? That's been a hallmark of yours.
Sure.
And so I would tend to think you're supportive of what Sonia's saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's fabulous. The the advice that I gave before the show was, if I was speaking to those that constituency, because of course I wasn't involved with the campaign, although I regret it in some regard, because something I want to talk about it in a minute. Is to tone them down, and I made the parallel with Barack Obama, who is terribly unpopular in America right now, and I think part of the reason is because he flew in on angel's wings and came as the great savior and salvation. And the level of expectation was enormous. And I think, to some degree, you're getting that with Lisa. And she's had her detractors, the bizarre decision of Ida Chong to come out of left field and go on the attack. And this notion, which I thought was absolutely hilarious, that we talked about on the last show, which was that a vote for Lisa Helps was a vote for Dean Fortin or something.
Or Ida Chong.
Yeah, or Ida Chong. And it was like...
from Dean Fortin's
camp, yeah. But if she's in the lead... then it's a vote for Lisa Helps is a vote for Lisa Helps.
Yeah.
And
it was a tie.
Well, you always get this, right? And then for Ida Chong to finish that distant third really spoke to what was actually happening, right?
And everybody knew she was coming in third. Let's make that clear.
Yeah. Well, I figured third or fourth.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking a lot about the new generation, new politics. It's interesting.
And I knew some of the people who brought her in. You can imagine.
It's interesting, Paul, that and I don't want to dwell on this, but there is an old guard that is now should go away,
or retool themselves,
or do something because they certainly anyway
be part of the solution. All right.
Yeah.
This is why I'm jealous of John, because John was involved with this campaign, and I wasn't. And it wasn't to say that I have regrets being neutral. But I wanted to see the mechanics of this campaign, because I was told, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this was a brilliantly executed classic campaign model with a full poll organization and volunteers in every position and stuff. And in the entire time that I've ever done political campaigns, the chart's been on the wall and at least three quarters empty. So,
yeah, likewise. Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. So is this just a nasty rumor, or is this actually true? Did you actually put together a full campaign team?
I attempted to put together a full campaign team. There were a couple of holes, which meant I wore a lot of hats.
Okay.
And it also meant that Lisa was still wearing some hats that she shouldn't have been as well.
Oh, okay.
So
it wasn't as brilliant as Bernard was.
I could give you the org chart. It was mostly populated.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. It was mostly populated, and I had a couple pinch hitters that were able to do a lot of different things, and I moved them around to do different. I had a person documenting our workflows and business systems had resiliency built into the system.
To your point, Paul, I've also been around the block politically with you and saw the inside of what was fundamentally the GoTV campaign, Get the vote out.
Yeah.
It's better, more organized, more efficient than anything I have seen.
Yeah.
In the very hallmark of those high liberal days when Gordon Campbell won 72 seats, this was the best campaign. Sonia, honestly, you need to write a book. Tell us in that last week, what happened.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think you've already nailed it earlier with your comment that the candidate drew in the people too, right? I mean, who? I don't know a single person that's met Lisa and said, you know, I don't. She rubs me wrong, or I don't really, you know. It doesn't happen. Like people have
it happened
positive,
in the last week. Talk to us.
People
about
have
that.
Positive experiences. Okay, fair enough.
So there's two things we can talk about in the last week. There's GoTV and there's tactics from other campaigns.
GoTV.
The GoTV. I mean, really, it's not rocket science. It's really not rocket
science. Yeah, yeah.
It's fairly mathematical.
The listeners who don't know kind of what it means,
so
what's happening.
Get out the vote sounds really complicated, but all it really means is doing everything you can in your power to remove all the barriers for the people that you've now inspired to support your candidate to actually get out and spend the hour to go vote for them
right.
in the midst of a busy day and a busy life.
Sonia, how are those people first identified? A lot of folks don't get that.
Okay, so when we talk about basic mechanics of campaigning or of grassroots campaigning, because not everybody does this, you number one need to identify your supporters. And the reason you need to do that, frankly, is just to get their contact information so that you can get them to the polls on advance poll day and on vote day. Because otherwise, everything you've done has been a waste of time. Because people will find reasons not to vote, even if they have every intention in the world to vote. Mm-hmm. So that means phoning them to remind them. That means making sure they have all the information that they need. It means driving them to the polls if they need a ride to the polls. It means offering to babysit their kids, water their plants, walk their dog, you know, whatever they need, whatever the barrier is in their minds to voting. In some cases, there were immobile people for whom we created a document that they could sign and actually vote by mail-in ballot, even though they were here in Victoria.
How do you first identify who they are? Is that from the knocking on the door?
Every campaign activity, you bring a clipboard.
Okay.
Every campaign activity.
Because folks have challenged me. Mm-hmm. Like, they sort of get the concept of getting out the vote, but how do you know where it is?
Yeah.
Right. Especially if you don't have a list to begin with, because we built it from scratch. So you empower your volunteers to get very solicitous with people that they're speaking to. Are you a Lisa supporter? Yes, great. The next best thing you can do for us is let us stay in touch with you.
Voter ID and get out the vote.
Yeah.
And it's a principle in electoral politics, not always a practice.
But
Sonia's
team did a dry run the previous week.
For the
get out the vote on the advance poll. We did a dress rehearsal.
Wow. So you know what, John? When I predicted that Dean Fortin was going to have a narrow victory over Lisa Helps, it was on the presumption that the NDP machine, which does this and does it generally pretty well, would get behind Dean and would.
Well, here's my theory on that. The 25 to 40-year-old vote, which clearly represents a whole bunch of stuff we've been chatting about earlier in the show, I think is now mobile. And where we originally thought that lived in a under an NDP umbrella, now is fluid. So that whole
that from people that I know within the NDP that there is something of a generational divide.
Yeah.
And they risk, I wouldn't say they've lost, but they risk losing the younger demographic within that party if they don't start thinking outside the box, if they don't start thinking beyond us, them, black, white.
It's a 1960s philosophy that's underpinning that party. And when people talk about social democrats, and you know, there's some fantastic examples, and we could go in off on a tangent of this. When the NDP gets elected in Saskatchewan, people don't freak out. When the NDP gets elected in Manitoba, people don't freak out. When the NDP looks like they might win in British Columbia, people freak out because they go, these people have demonstrated their incompetence. They haven't changed a bit since the last time they were in power. And last time they were in power, let's just say, didn't go terribly well. And so fundamentally, there needs to be some changes within that party. Because inevitably they're going to win again. Inevitably they're going to win federally.
I'm not so sure
inevitably
about that.
Inevitably they're going
to
win
federally. Because that 25 to 40-year-old vote is now shifting.
Yeah.
And it'll find a home, and I don't know where that home will be. Nonetheless, we're now in the final week. You've done a dress rehearsal.
You got me sidetracked.
Drum roll. We're in a dress rehearsal. You've done a dress rehearsal. All of a sudden, it would appear out of nowhere that the criticisms that were previously going against Dean and his incumbency were starting to be leveled at Lisa. What happens within the campaign at that point? Technically, from your perspective, how do you adjust? How do you deal with that? What happens?
Ideally, you don't get distracted. Ideally, you stick to your knitting, to quote Rob Hines, our voter ID guy. That isn't entirely what happened because, you know, for Lisa and for myself, this was new. So, yeah, there were hours in there of, okay, oh my God, what do we do? Well, what you do is you keep moving forward. So it actually began the week before in the debates. And not coincidentally, what happened the week before is all the campaigns did internal polling. So once it became clear that Lisa was trending or Lisa was in the lead, whatever their polls returned, that's why she became the target. So, you know, a lot of the feedback that we got that first week of being attacked was,
don't worry about it.
You should feel flattered. It means they realize that you're in the lead and you're the one to take down. So there was an element of being prepared for what was coming. But even still, the first time, I think in particular for Lisa, and I won't speak for her, but I'll tell you one thing that happened for me in that last week. I learned unequivocally I will never be a candidate. There needs to be much more of a paradigm shift in the nature and level of respect in campaigning before I'm willing to be a candidate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is why the process, the fact that it's that dirty eliminates a whole lot of people from the equation, a whole lot of people not willing to put themselves and their families through that. And it's so unfortunate because how many wonderful, great, worthy, talented people will just refuse to go through that?
Tons.
Exactly.
Tons.
I know I engaged in quite a bit of social media rebuttal against several of the candidates in the last week. And I thought it so ironic that the very person that they're trying to, they, this movement is trying to get rid of, i.e. me, is necessary at the end of the day to do battle.
Yeah.
Old We're not trying to get rid of you. Not trying to get rid of you.
In sort of a very generic, you know, very, very sort of old school way.
I've been trying to get rid of
them
for months.
Yeah.
You know... How does mudslinging versus mudslinging, you know?
And so for our listeners, I would say to you, the next time that you get angry about something a politician did and you go to Facebook and you say all, and then whatever label you want to use, conservatives, liberals, socialists, whatever it is, are a bunch of dirty, and then whatever adjectives you want to add to that, scumbags, whatever it is, think about the fact that you're talking about actual real people.
Yeah.
And not only that, but you're thinking about actual real people that care enough about the world that they're willing to put their name and their time towards making a change. You might totally disagree with the change that they're trying to make, but at least they've taken the time to do that. And disagreement is great. Disagreement is healthy. That's as a society, that's how we move forward.
Nothing wrong with disagreement, but when it's lying,
yeah,
that's a problem.
There was some lying.
Lying cannot be tolerated.
You know,
and I had to speak up.
Yeah.
Even though likely Sonia
absolutely
wasn't entirely supportive of that, I couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah. Well, and we see this on all levels. Perfect example. Every day on Facebook, somebody posts something that the federal government's doing, and they blame Stephen Harper for it and call him all the adjectives and everything else.
Oh, my cat coughed up a furball this morning. It was totally Stephen Harper's fault.
Or Obama or whoever. Fill in the blank, right? And my rebuttal is always this. There are plenty of reasons not to like Stephen Harper. Plenty. Pick a real one. Right? You don't need to make up new ones because there's plenty of real ones, right? I don't like his policy on the oil sands. I don't like the policy or whatever, right? And so in a microcosm, that's what we need to be doing with these people, especially local politicians, people like Lisa Helps, who put their whole reputation on the line to serve their community.
Excellent. Now, before we go further, we're now reaching Saturday.
Yeah.
So the so-called negative comments are coming fierce and hard. It's getting tense. We're getting near the day. The voter mobilization is fully underway. Take us to Saturday and that day for you, for the team, right through to the final poll number 17. And gosh, if City of Victoria can figure a way to count their hand ballots better, that would be a win for all of us.
Yeah, they're literally working out some kinks in their system. Saturday.
Well, they've only been doing it for 120 years.
So. I mean, everybody was running on high octane Saturday, but because we had done the dry run, or actually it wasn't even a dry run, we did a GoTV effort on the Monday advance poll so that we could work out the kinks in our system and run it that much more smoothly on Saturday. And I think that comes from an entrepreneurial mindset or here's a pilot project, let's test it, let's, you know, see what works and keep moving. I had brilliantly minded people running the GoTV, so Aldous Spurl, our office director, plus, beautifully managed the systems, and Adam Sean, who's formerly been an organizer for Independence and NDP actually in the past, had GoTV experience, so he was our captain. And Rob Hines, formerly an organizer with the Greens, all these guys were just, I didn't really have to do very much, frankly. I just had to spell it out what needed to happen. I captured what I was hearing from them. We put it together in task lists, and away we went. We executed. And it was simple. It was like, here's the list. Let's prioritize the lists. What do we do after we've gone through them one time? Well, we label them. What's the course of action the second time around? Like, it was just very mechanistic. And so by Saturday, the stress, like, the energy was high, but the stress levels weren't as high as you might have thought they would be. And then we, of course, you know, being the band of crazy young people we are, we're making juice, really gross-looking green juice that kept people going. We had volunteers serving
better
other volunteers.
Yeah,
there was a spirit of festivity on Saturday, all day. There was, at any given time, 20, 25 people in the office. When we had too many people in the office, we sent them out with signs on a little parade.
Wow. Can I say this, John? Number of political campaigns I've been involved with, say 15. Number of political campaigns where the campaign manager says, we're going to do a get-out-the-vote campaign for the advance poll.
Oh, God, let me guess. 15. Zero.
15. Number of times it actually happened, zero.
Yeah,
number
know.
Of times the campaign manager says, we're going to have a flawlessly executed full team on the get-out-the-vote campaign, 15. Number of times there was a flawlessly executed full team on Get Out the Vote, zero.
No, that's why this is so unique.
Yeah.
That's why this is so special. That's why we mustn't let this go.
Yeah.
That this must be documented, this must be reported, and this must be celebrated.
Yeah.
Okay, celebrated. Yeah. So we're getting to the end. There's a bit of shenanigans going on. I get involved in the shenanigans. We're now hitting 8 o'clock. The voting comes in. Did you think it was so close? I didn't.
Did you send? Did you have to send him a text to tell him to shut up or something?
Because I at times when I saw some of our social media people getting entangled in things, I did back channel and say, find a way to.
But
get
it wasn't me.
It wasn't you.
which was interesting because I was being accused by one other campaign in particular of sending people to attack
to
them.
Say stuff.
And this was actually was a case of this person not owning the fact that they tended to actually be seeking it out themselves. But anyway, if only they knew how much I was asking people to cease and desist. But anyway, I mean, because the rule of thumb in social media is engage with people that are your supporters or that are swayable or that are asking genuine questions. Don't spend a whole bunch of time arguing with people who are fixed or never going to move in your direction.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. In the last couple of days, I won't deny it, I hit anger. I definitely was angry at, you know, even though...
So you're doing it right.
Pardon me?
You're doing it right.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't naive. It wasn't that I didn't expect certain things to happen, but I guess I didn't expect to get so angry about it. And so, I mean, I put in a pretty angry phone call to another campaign on the Saturday because when we were doing the Get Out the Vote calling, a lot of our supporters were telling us that they had been receiving phone calls from another campaign that was getting out the vote and were being strongly advised not to vote for our candidate because, you know, that message of if you vote for Lisa, you're going to get Ida.
Yeah.
And that, speaking of lying, that's blatant lying because everybody at that point knew.
There was no public poll, though.
So that was the reason that made me angry.
Okay, so
I'll just finish this off. The reason that made me angry is it was very it was deliberately misleading, and it was this notion of scaring people away from voting their true conscience with misinformation.
Yeah.
And frankly, that's voter suppression.
Yeah.
And that pissed me off, and it gave me this target.
Okay, Sonia. Okay, Sonia.
Plus, it happened on election day.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay, Sonia. Yeah. Enough softballs here. Here's my hardball question for you. You had a poll in hand, I presume, showing Lisa in the lead?
Yes, but totally not a scientific poll.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why was it? Was that why you didn't release it? Because honestly...
But why would they have to? Why would they have to? Where did
no,
it
no,
say
no,
that?
No, John. I'm not saying that she has to. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying strategically, when you've got... when you got people from another campaign saying Ida Chong, if you vote for Lisa Helps, it's a vote for Ida Chong. That was predicted by Bernard and me and everybody who knows this game 2 weeks ahead of time. The way to stop that is to have a poll showing your candidate in a neck and neck race and coming out in front of that.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about maintaining the notion that this is a tight race.
Yeah,
our polls. Strategic objective was voter identification.
Yeah.
So it was structured in such a way that skewed the results
towards Lisa.
Towards Lisa. So, and we identified.
So you didn't know she had it. you just
mean,
had a stroke.
Our poll, I can tell you now, because it's, you know, our poll, the way we conducted it was, number one, we identified that it was being conducted by our campaign.
Yeah.
We put her as the first choice, which skews
right.
the results.
Okay.
Telling people that this was our campaign skews the results. People might hang up.
Yeah.
And actually, and we know for a fact that people, some people falsely answer the poll, but I digress.
Right.
So in that poll, she was massively in the lead.
Okay.
Actually. But the 1, 2, 3, 4 was accurate. And in fact, the 3 and 4 numbers were accurate. In other words, Ida and Stephen's ultimate results were similar.
Yeah. Ida had some money in her campaign. She had to have known this.
Yeah. Yeah, though they polled. I heard from many people that they were receiving phone polls from campaigns, and they would call me and say, is this you guys? And I'd say, no.
Yeah.
So that said to me, and I had one person who's analyzing who it might be that was running the poll, because other campaigns didn't identify that they were the ones running the poll. So,
interesting.
But I have to say that because of what was going on in the final days, I had mentally prepared myself all along for the possibility of a loss. You have to. But something shifted in the last couple of days where I thought to myself, if we lose by a close margin, as a result, because I felt votes being peeled away in the final days from the things that were happening,
yeah.
both the phone campaign, the smear campaigns, I thought, my God, if after all of this we lose, especially by a slim margin, knowing that we lost because of those tactics,
yeah.
you know, maybe that would have been a good thing, because I think it would have turned me into one unrelenting crusader. And I could have done amazing things based on that anger.
Yeah.
But
happened to me.
Yeah. I remember thinking, I don't know how I will.
You want to hear lies. Just yeah. be part of a federal campaign.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
strategically, and you're hearing chatter in the background. We're at the beautiful Chatterbox coffee house in downtown Victoria, and people are coming in and they're drinking some of their fabulous coffee.
It's coffee break time.
Yeah. Yep. So strategically, if I was running your campaign as an outside observer, my feeling was, as soon as I had that poll number, I would have not necessarily released the poll, but certainly would have released something along the lines of, inside numbers indicate it's a neck and neck race between Lisa and Dean. Come out on front of it and consider a vote for Ida Chong is a vote for Dean Ford. Right? Because people think strategically, and if people are voting for Ida Chong because they're right of center, right, or they're BC Liberal supporters or whatever, and they know she's going to lose, do they want the NDP mayor, or do they want the Lisa Helms mayor?
I know you have a response to that, but I do. And this is something
that... Is this too hardball?
Oh, it's softball. Fundamental to your suggestion is that the tactic is to say something negative about somebody else. That is not a part of how this campaign thinks.
I don't think it necessarily
about earning your vote. And
I think it's strategic.
Strategic isn't necessarily. Arguably, our candidate's better because someone else.
No.
X.
No, not better.
That's not. Speak to that.
Core to the principles of how we earned our vote is the word earned. And I think as soon as you start vote split messaging, you're appealing to fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we were opposed to doing that.
Yeah.
We fundamentally believed that you need to earn the vote and not frighten people away from how they want to vote. And frankly, we also didn't necessarily know. Ida was pulling votes from both camps. So I don't even know if that would have really resonated for a lot of people. But
I would have as an outsider. And,
right.
and obviously I have my opinions. As somebody who likes both of those candidates, as an outsider, I would have thought that if people knew that Ida Chong was going to lose, that the majority of those people would have strategically voted for...
We tried to get that messaging out. We didn't get it far and wide. We tried to get it out through our email lists and social media that this was between Lisa and Dean.
Right.
And the tough thing to counter was the amount of money that Ida was pouring into mainstream advertising.
Right.
Because to people's eyes, that says, oh, wow, she's a leading candidate.
Yeah.
It's hard to undo that.
That was undoubtedly the strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to undo that. I mean, early on, when we knew that that was going to happen, it's what prompted us to really get an early start on our signs. It's why I bought close to 1,000 lawn signs. It was to counter the visual of mainstream media with lawn signs.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is cheaper.
which is cheaper and is galvanizing.
Yeah. Well, it's true. Well, this is great. Thank you so much, Sonia, for being here with us today. And congratulations.
Thank you.
This is your first campaign that you've managed.
Yes.
And
not
I think
the last, I'm
you've
sure.
You've taught some old-timers here. At least one old-timer. That
you're a middle-timer.
That, you know, how to run a campaign, which is absolutely brilliant. Hats off. And I personally am excited to see what Victoria under Lisa's leadership is going to look like. I've said before, you know, she didn't arrive on the wings of angels, and, you know, people shouldn't hold out outlandish expectations of what she can get accomplished in 4 years, but it's going to be very interesting to see the transformational effects of a Lisa Helps mayoralship. So, final thoughts?
Final thoughts are, one of the things that came up on Sunday night at her postmortem was throughout her governance, she needs to still be raising the voter turnout. And strategically, what we knew was required for that to happen. I mean, negative campaigning is a form of voter suppression. We know that. We know that, and it's why status quo or incumbents will often use it, right? Because all they need to do then is pay attention to that 30% of people that vote currently. What brings new people in is inspiring messages, is things that are outside the box, spirit of collaboration, things that we teach our kindergartners to do if we start to expect it in our politicians. And it's, we start to model that type of collaboration that we need to have across the board in our culture and in our communities in order to tackle the problems that we all collectively share. I think if Lisa continues to model that, which I don't doubt for a second that she will, that spirit of collaboration, that spirit of inclusivity, even when you are opposed to her, brings in greater results, more resiliency, and at this point, people are going to accuse her potentially of that just being a whole lot of wishful thinking. And meanwhile, it's put into action all over the place right now in the world. And we just need to show people that it works at this level of governance. And hopefully that seeds inspiration for it moving into other levels of governance and in the private sector or wherever it needs to go. That, you know what? Let's do away with the lines in the sand. Let's do away with not only putting things in boxes, but typically we only have two boxes to choose from, right? Mm-hmm. Left, right, you and me. And it's really inhibiting our ability to face the challenges that we face today.
Right on.
Extraordinarily inspirational. We've had likely 4 or 5 shows, John, Paul, and Mike, about this municipal election.
We'll probably have a couple more.
Yeah, I suspect we'll move into it.
Well, and I predicted we wouldn't in the last episode because we'd done so much, and I didn't think a whole lot was going to change anyway. And then all of a sudden, we get this stuff happening out of left field.
But so nonetheless, we will be having chats about other community issues.
Yeah.
But as I've stated in most of the previous shows, and indicated, no matter where I live, that I would vote for that person. At this moment, I would vote for Sonia. And so nice to have met you and been a part of this experience.
Thank you. It was wonderful to meet you. Don't underestimate your role. Campaign.
Right on. Until next time.
Take care.
Thank you.
Just one.